There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Let's talk to John Defterios, who should be on the line now from Abu Dhabi. John, it's always good to have you on.
Thank you. Technology is working, even though you guys are enjoying the golf tournament. I'm a little bit jealous.
It's been a day out to remember, John, I have to say. Let me get straight to it. We've got lots of things to talk to you about. You are just back from Saudi the week there. You also have covered the air show at OPEC, of course, just before you went. But I wanted to start in Saudi, the Miss Global Forum event around youth. What have we learned?
Well, you know, it's fascinating because there's this international concern, Tim, about the crackdown on corruption in Saudi Arabia. And I thought, well, what's going to be the temperature or the mood on the ground there, particularly with 70% of the population below the age of 30, right? Does the crown prince, who's 32 years old, have the support of the youth? And so, in fact, I just got done finishing a column, which we'll publish this week. Overwhelming support is the answer. So literally every person I spoke to between 25 and 55, and that's going beyond the youth, right? But literally across the board, they said, look, it's time to kind of deal with this inherent corruption and taking down the big fish. It was like a taboo and everybody saw it. They support it. They said it's better to do it at the top. And as one executive said to me on the sidelines, could you imagine anybody trying any attempt at corruption from this point forward if, in fact, he has tackled those at the very top? The youth that I spoke to, some that are trying to be entrepreneurs, some that have just came out of university, again, categorically said, look, we needed a renewal, a refreshment, a tackling of the issues. So we support it wholeheartedly. Now, what I included in my column here, and I think it's an important point, we have to see the due process here, the legal structure of Saudi Arabia. Does it go beyond those being held at the Ritz-Carlton and other venues here? That it is a transparent effort here, and that it ends up in a clean global governance. There were some reports, I tried to verify them, couldn't on the ground with very top sources, that they're settling perhaps 70% of holdings of an individual, whether it's Prince Al-Waleed, who's worth about $20 billion, and that would free them? And nobody would verify it, although the sources that did report it, the Financial Times, for example, very solid. So these are the question marks that international investors are asking today. But if you're asking the question of people are happy on the ground that he is weeding this out of the system, categorically, yes.
And John, you were at the event and you were surrounded by youth. You said you've spoken to some executives. But what was the overall impression from some of the younger people there about the actions by the Crown Prince? Someone I'm sure they can relate to, seeing someone of their age and taking action.
Well, you know, it's fascinating. Beyond this issue of corruption that I talked about, there's an invigoration of society that it's hard to even talk about from a distance, right? If you go on the ground, you would suggest, wow, this is really a change. And you used to measure change in years in Saudi Arabia, right? What happened last year over this year? Well, I was there less than a month ago. And then that month, it changed yet again. It's radical change. And I used the comments, Natalie, on the stage about the renewal of Islam. And then a member of the royal family from the Jeddah region came up and she said, look, don't use the word renewal when we talk about Islam and modernization. These are the original roots of the religion, and the principles are society. And that's what the Crown Prince is trying to bring back here. And this is something that the youth is latching onto. You know, there's a very high unemployment rate in Saudi Arabia. Overall, it's nearly 13%. It's not budging. So they don't have the budgets that they did before with oil prices. So they realize the need to diversify. Now, if there's one kind of inherent danger here, he's firing in all angles here, you know, against corruption. Implementing the Vision 2030 plan, allowing women to drive, modernizing society, taking a hard line in the region, drawing some lines in the sand with on tolerance, trying to launch a new city on the Red Sea coast called Neom, as we know about, another Red Sea project for tourism. It's a lot for society to try to handle. I think that's the biggest risk is there's too many things on the hopper. But the youth that I spoke to, and it was incredible. We had a CNN Arabic workshop, which I participated in training journalists of the future, digital journalists and traditional journalists, and the level of questioning and the level of interest and the level to be engaged internationally is something that sounds like it's propaganda. It's something you can't overstate. So we hope he delivers on all of these things. That's the challenge today. There's a lot of things in the works. And what I was suggesting in interviews and in different times I spoke to the executives, does the society have the bandwidth to tackle everything at the same time? That's what we have to watch. Is due process going to continue when it comes to the corruption investigation? When does that end? As they said, this was phase one. So if you're not careful, you have many phases, and then it affects consumer spending, and then perhaps it erodes the support of the youth. We haven't reached that level at all. Right now, he has the full support.
John, let me ask you, talk more broadly, I guess. Oil above $60 seems to be holding on at the moment. There's a question from that, I guess. Job done by OPEC.
Yeah. It's a good question, right, Tim? Because they worked really hard to get it here. This was led by Saudi Arabia, by the way, working with Russia and then the 20-plus producers they have involved in this deal. November 30th, what I thought was interesting, Khalid Al-Falih, while I was in Saudi Arabia and he was traveling to the COP23 in Bonn, said, I'd like us in the end of this month to sign on to roll this agreement through 2018. Two motivations here. He says that the excess supply won't be eaten up by the end of the first quarter where the agreement now expires. Number two, they want to do their IPO in 2018, and $60 or $65 a barrel is a sweet spot for them. And they realize if you don't keep the agreement going and the other producers come back in again, we'll have oversupply issues in the future. So they made it very clear now. They're on the record saying, let's meet at the end of the month. Let's get collective buy-in and roll this over for all of 2018. And some are suggesting they should just keep it this way. Much more discipline, much more agreement, much more collaboration, and protect $60 to $65 a barrel. For listeners who are suggesting, well, let's go back to the heyday and get, you know, $80, $90, $100 a barrel, I don't think that's realistic, because when you get to that price, it brings in higher cost projects, whether it's in the United States or elsewhere, which will just bring the price back down again. So it requires a discipline here. And OPEC, when everybody's been counting them out, they can probably, you know, kind of say, look, we worked very hard for over a year to make this happen, and it's working, but can we continue? Is the multi-billion dollar question, of course.
And John, just very briefly, finally, what is the view of BP and Total of France? You spoke to both CEOs.
They kind of agree with this view here, that we're not going to see a rocket shot up in prices. And if we get to $70, which some are predicting in 2018, it'll come right back to this band, that'll be $55 to $65 for the very reason I talked about here. So everybody's making money in this sort of bandwidth. It's not too hot, not too cold. It's kind of the new Goldilocks level. Secondarily here, and this is something that emerged at the ADIPEC meeting, in the renewable space, there's money going into renewables. But at the end of the day, you have hydrocarbons, you know, with peak demand probably hitting the next 20 years, demand for oil probably leveling out. But these are the low-cost producers of the world. So if anybody survives it, it's the Middle East producers with the lowest costs, right, going forward. So it's not all dire, but you have to kind of manage the process of trying to find a price that works for everybody. It doesn't discourage renewables, gets people into other spaces of energy production, whether it's nuclear or solar energy, biomass, but at the same time keeps the oil and gas energy alive here in the Middle East where it's the lowest cost. It seems to be very simple, but delivering across the promise is always a challenge when there's that much money at stake.
CNN's John Defterios is based in Abu Dhabi. John, we're going to have to love you and leave you. The driving range is beckoning here at Jumeirah Golf Estate.
Next time you have to invite me to come down to the golf course, I think I'll do it from there.
You're always welcome. Consider that a given. John, good to talk to you. Thank you again.
Take care.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.